really pleased to welcome to Writer's Block author Susie Quinn. Welcome to Writer's Block.
Hello, Sarah. It's so nice to be here. And by the way, I'm sorry if my voice is a bit croaky. We did an Oktoberfest at the weekend and we were like standing on tables singing Come On Eileen, I think it was one of them. And so I'm a little bit croaky, but we'll work around
out.
It.
I think we'll smooth you out as the show goes along. And it does actually sound like a really good weekend you had.
Oh, yeah, it was excellent. Yeah, it was really, really good. Yeah, good fun.
Excellent. Did you manage to get any writing done over the weekend?
I didn't do any writing this weekend. I was far too hungover, like, to be honest, on Sunday. It was a really good weekend. To be honest, I don't usually write at the weekend. I treat it like a sort of day job. So I usually do 9 to 5. Monday to Friday, not writing the whole time, but I look at it that way, and then the weekends I have a bit of a break, and sometimes I'll do like a bit of research at the weekend, like I'll watch YouTube videos about characters or something like that, or I see that as like the fun stuff, you know, or yeah. I watch a film or something that's on the topic, and yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like a job really, but
they always say if you're doing it right, it shouldn't feel like a job, should it?
Yeah.
Right, so you've written thrillers and romances, but let's focus on two of the books that you you sent to me via email, actually. And that's Lies We Tell Mothers and The Bad Mother's Christmas. How did these come about?
Oh, well, so The Bad Mother's Christmas is part of a series. It's called The Bad Mother's Series, and it's like turned into this mega best-selling series. So that was good. And then after that, a publisher asked me to do a non-fiction book. So Lies We Tell Mothers is kind of like a kind of non-fiction autobiography of my life as a parent. And it's funny, and it's kind of the transition and the growth of going through parenting and all that kind of thing. So that's how that came about. And The Bad Mother's Diary, which was the first book in the Bad Mother series, happened when my youngest daughter, I think she was about one, something like that. So I obviously had no imagination and just thought, I'll write about babies and what's happening with babies and that'll be funny. So that's what I did. So yeah, they're sort of romantic comedy. So I always say it's a bit like Bridget Jones with a baby. It's that kind of thing. So it's a diary. It's easy to read. It's funny. Yeah. Relaxing.
Yeah, so it's also going to be, your audience is going to be a huge amount of women, and men probably, but a huge amount of women.
Well, I haven't come across too many men who are readers. However, with the Lies We Tell Mothers books, I did get a few, and it was really nice. And some of the reviews were like husbands or partners of women who just had a baby who were like reading it out to their partners and things like that. And that felt really nice. That felt like, oh, you know, it really, I was sort of doing some good, that book, because it's quite a hard, you know, you have quite a hard time having a baby. So those early first couple of months can feel quite dark, actually. And to know someone else has, you know, gone through it and you're not the only one going like, oh my God, I don't know what I'm doing, feels quite nice, you know, you've got a connection, a friend.
Yeah, you have, yes. It's been a long time for me. My daughter's 26, so yeah, it's been a long time for me, but I can absolutely remember all of those feelings.
You look so young.
Thank you. You can come again. No, I mean, all of those feelings, because a lot of that comes down to lack of confidence. You don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
You don't know what you're meant to be doing.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, there's no protocol, is there?
Yeah.
Just have to go with instinct, and sometimes instinct doesn't really kick in until, I don't know, they're about 10 years old or something.
Oh my God, yeah, I don't think I had any instinct at all. And also, because I had a cesarean, I've only worked this out like later. Yeah, they give you loads of morphine, don't they? Mm-hmm. So the first, I don't know, day or two, was like, oh, this is fine, you know, it's all okay. And then the morphine stopped, and I actually never made this link. And then I remember just feeling so anxious, and probably most women do anyway, whether or not they've been given morphine or not. But, you know, just feeling like, oh my God, like I don't think I can do it. This is like torture. I remember being like, you know, all the times woken up, but it's not being able to stop it, I think. Not being able to kind of go like, okay, well, all I have to do is get up and do this and the baby sleeps. No, it's, you know, you get up, you do this, you do that, and the baby's still crying. And oh, it was quite terrifying, and thinking, you know, what if like I die of lack of sleep? Can that happen? You know?
I can't do anything, actually, if I don't have a huge amount of sleep every night.
Yeah, exactly the
same. I very, very much need my sleep.
Yeah.
Also my dream life as well, because that's a huge part of me.
Yeah.
But the anxiety you were saying about, it's so severe that you actually think, you know, the child is asleep, and then you're thinking, it murmured, it moved. Oh, my God, what was that? What was that? And so you can't ever relax.
Yeah.
And actually, even now, I mean, if she was... ill or something, you know, the mummy part of you still comes out, and you still, you know, fall straight back into, what can I do? How can I help? Because you feel so utterly helpless.
I've kind of heard as well, what have we done to ourselves, Sarah? What have we done? I've kind of heard, because I sort of, you kind of hope as they get older it gets easier, and I have heard from people that actually know, because then they're teenagers and then they go out, and then you worry because they're not, you know, you can't even do much to keep them safe. You just have to, you know, anyway. It's all terrible.
Yeah,
but it's not, is it? We know it's not. It's lovely. It's really, you know, it's beautiful and lovely and wonderful, but we're allowed to moan as well.
Yeah, we are allowed to moan. Yeah, actually, it's a good point, because you're often made to feel like, you know, you're not allowed to, because it is a precious gift.
Yeah, but, you know. True. Also, yeah, and some people really struggle as well. So yes. I think I've had a few friends who, they've really struggled, and then they felt really bad about complaining. Or if they've, I know one couple who adopted, and that was really hard, because it's just as hard for them, if not more so, than anyone else. But they kind of have that awful pressure of like, oh, but you should be so grateful because you've been given, you know, so, yeah.
So there's a lot of guilt and anxiety. But, you know, anyone that's just about to start being, you know, going into motherhood or fatherhood, it is great, we promise.
It's really nice. So I wouldn't swap it at all. I mean, it's wonderful. It makes you grow and learn, but just that's can be hard sometimes. But you're glad, you know, you're glad you did it.
And actually also it's become material for you as well, for your books.
Yeah,
so that's,
exactly.
You know, that's a bit of a bonus, isn't
it? Yeah,
really?
So it's a nice bonus, yeah. And it's really funny sometimes as well, being a parent. I mean, that's kind of, I hope, what a lot of my books bring, is that just the humour with it and the lightheartedness of it, because it's not all, you know, serious. It can be really funny, and the stupid things you do and say and all that stuff is funny, so, you know.
Actually, yeah. It's probably, when you think about it, I suppose motherhood or parenthood is very much like writing, because it's all about perception. It's what you think is going to happen, what you hope is going to happen, and then life happens,
yeah,
and then you sort of view it again and yeah,
and go, oh yeah, that was different,
that was fun. Let's try another, let's do a sequel. Right, how long, Susie, have you been writing, and what drew you to it originally?
Okay, well, I've been writing a really, really long time. My first stories that I wrote, I was about 5 or 6 years old, and my mum is a teacher, so she always brought books around, and she was very kind of inspiring in terms of bringing just wonderful books, just really fun, lovely, beautiful illustrations, that kind of stuff, you know. So my sister and I always really, really loved writing stories, and so, you know, that I'd say that's when I started writing. When I was about 9, we got a computer at home, and I started writing stories on the computer, which felt like amazing, like
really,
wow. But my dad read all those stories, typical, isn't it, you know, you couldn't, no passwords back then, so he read them all, and he thought he was being a nice supportive dad, but I was like absolutely mortified, because I was like, no, these are, you know, these are my stories that I've written. And I wrote about, there was a boy in our school who I really didn't like, he was a real, we're not allowed to swear, I've been warned in advance, but fill in the blank, and so I wrote about him in the story. He was like the bad guy in the story, and Dad was like, oh, they're great stories, love, and oh, you've put that boy and you didn't like at school, but you've just spelt his surname backwards, haven't you? And I was really like, oh,
wow.
You know, how embarrassing. So yeah, I was doing that, and then I've just always, you know, I've always wrote. So probably when I was about 20, I started writing every day and started having ambitions that I was going to write a novel, and I travelled quite a lot at that time. So I was, while I was travelling, I was writing each day. I'd write in my emails and email it to myself and stuff. So I always wrote 1,000 words a day, no matter what. And I read like every bestseller I could get my hands on. Like there was a BBC chart of like the top 100 bestsellers, and I read all of them. So like, you know, Lord of the Rings, all that kind of stuff. Many of them really boring, but I did it. And yeah, so then I've been working on for years, and he sold it to a publisher. But that experience was an interesting one. It was good. It was really good in many ways, because it was a proper great big tick in my, you know, universal ordering book. But I've always been like an entrepreneurial person, and being with a publisher is more like being an employee. A lot more like being an employee. So there's nothing wrong with that at all. And it really suits some people. And sometimes it suits me, but mainly I really like kind of being in charge more. So I self-publish as well. And I really love that. I love design. I love doing the covers. I don't design the covers myself, but I like commissioning the covers. My brother-in-law does all the covers for me, and he's amazing. So, yeah, that's kind of a very brief CV run through.
You've got the job. It's funny though, because how, you know, there's so many similarities between us, and
yeah, definitely.
Always strange when you hear other people doing similar things to you, and we actually live very close together, and we didn't.
Yeah,
know that
absolutely.
Either.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm probably a bit of fangirling now, actually.
Oh no, I'll fangirl right back.
You said earlier on about when you were at school reading those first books. I mean, and also about the 1,000 words a day that you would write no matter what. Two things that jumped out at me for that. When you read those first books years and years and years ago, ones jump out for you that you remember?
When I was a kid, we had lots of Shirley Hughes books, so they were amazing. But when I got older, I loved like Nancy Drew, all the kind of like disposable American series. I loved those. I remember we used to go on holiday to France, and it was like the most boring holidays. And I'd go to the library and literally pack 12 books in my bag. There was no room for like anything else except for my books that I brought. Favorite book is Secret Diary of Adrian Mole. That series.
Yes.
I love those books. And I think The Bad Mother's Diary has similarities with those books, to be honest, like with the characters and how she's got a real style, Susan Townsend. It's really, really, really clever. I'm not saying that, you know, I've done as good a job as she has, but it's really, she almost does things. When you pick it apart as a writer, what looks really simple, it just looks like, oh, she's just written a diary entry, is actually almost like three or four levels deep. She's actually got the character and the situation, and then she's made it funny, and it's really quite time-consuming to do it. And as I say, I don't think anyone will ever do the same job that she did, because those books were absolutely amazing. But I really love those books. I find them really inspirational.
Do you think then that that's had an influence on how you write now?
Definitely. I love that really accessible style. I love diary styles as a reader. So I love it when you can pick up a book and there's lots of white space, and it's really, you can jump into it. It's really easy. It's not difficult to read. It's not that I don't like complicated books per se, but they're harder work. And especially if you've been writing all day, I like something that kind of holds your hand more in terms of getting you into the story and stuff. So I would say, I mean, yeah, it definitely has. I feel like writing should be made as easy as possible for the reader. And I think that's where, you know, we were talking about classics earlier, right?
Yes.
About, you know, and things that I remember doing, I think it was for some course or another, we did a sentence breakdown on the classic books. And good writing should have reasonably short sentences, obviously with a good rhythm in them, but reasonably short sentences. And there's a number, and I forget what it is, but maybe a maximum of 10 words or something. And Jane Austen sentences, we measured them, and they were like 70 words long or something like that. And I love Jane Austen, but there's a, you know what I mean?
That's
if she wrote
heavy.
Today, that's a lot of,
yes.
There's not a lot of time, you know. You've really got to remember a lot to get through a 70-word sentence,
yes.
You know, and there's a lot of distractions now. There's a lot of things trying to take our attention. So I'm kind of all for that nice, simple style, personally.
Yes, no, I totally get that, actually. And I can agree with that to a point, because at the minute I was thinking about the university work I'm doing. It's very heavy because it's Big House. So
yeah.
Big House is a very heavy
book.
Oh,
wow.
And it's,
well done.
I haven't done it yet. It's analysing.
So, yeah,
you know,
so you've got to read it and
really, really critical, really analyse everything. And then when you think you've done it, do it again. And when
yeah.
you think you've done it again, do it again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
I'm
yeah.
I'm so sick of it.
Yeah.
And this is our first week, or
yeah.
this is the beginning of our second week. But also the other thing I was going to mention about being influenced by those early books is that one of mine was L.M. Montgomery's Anne of Green Gables.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I
yeah.
think that has actually influenced how I write now.
Oh, really?
So
you know,
it's such a crazy thing, isn't it? There's
yeah.
something so long ago.
Your book is much more, what's the word, much less embarrassing than my inspiration. It's much more of a proper,
well,
you know.
I think with her, because I'm one of those people who, loads of people hate this, actually, so I'll say this very, very quickly, but I'm one of those people who enjoys seeing a TV show or a film which takes you to the book rather than the other
mm-hmm,
way around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
I worked out very recently that I'm a very visual person, and without
yeah.
seeing the pictures,
yeah,
I have a hard time with the book.
Ah, so you need to see a Bleak House.
I do.
Is there
yeah.
a? Is there
oh,
a?
Yeah,
there must wrong. Be. Wasn't there? Must be loads.
Oh yes, I've but it's. I think it's just something in the brain. I'm not quite sure, but you know.
Oh, that's interesting.
You
well,
have
I think
to see the pictures.
Yeah, definitely. And there's lots of really good. Like I remember watching Gone Girl before I read the book, and it actually made it so much easier.
Yes.
I don't think Gone Girl's a particularly. I mean, I think it's an amazing book, but I don't think it's like really weighty and difficult. But it was made a lot easier from having the pictures in my head. Yes. I had to do a lot less work, which was nice.
Maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. I don't know. For me, it works. Other times, it just doesn't. So I don't know.
Yeah. Do you have a favourite, by the way? Sorry, adaptation. I was going to say book to film adaptation that you're like, yeah, that was just the best one.
I didn't know I was going to get asked.
Sorry.
I'll let you know. I've seen so many films that are adaptations from books. Some really work, some really, really don't.
Yeah.
But it's such a different medium.
Yeah,
I'm writing a blog about that at the moment, funnily enough. But it's such a different medium, but there are so many similarities.
Yeah.
And my daughter's an actress, so
I've seen it
from her point of view.
Yeah.
But also... this is a slight aside for listeners, but with a previous module at uni, I had to create a script,
mm-hmm.
and I then utterly appreciated what she goes through to portray someone convincingly.
Yeah.
Because when you're writing it in fiction, you are the creator, you imagine it how it's going to be, because you are the writer.
Yeah.
And then when it gets to the reader, you hope that they get to see what you see.
Yeah.
But when you're entrusting an actor
to
then say the words without any of the actions, that's all down to them and their influences.
Yeah.
There's a lot of trust that goes in with that. That's terrifying.
Yeah, definitely. It must be a nightmare if you're an actor and actress having a writer-director. That must be really hard, you know, because they must have an idea of...
There's probably so many skill sets there that I wouldn't know where to begin. Okay, so you've written thrillers and romance. What's the pull, do you think, of those specific genres?
So... romance seems to be something that people, there's a certain group of women who just read and read and read, like compulsively read romance, like literally like sometimes a book a day, something like that, that they just churn through them, you know, so they're just looking for, and it's just their entertainment, I guess, it's how they relax. Thrillers, I've never quite worked it out, honestly, what the pull is. I suppose we feel it's exciting, isn't it, when you don't know what's going to happen, you know, page turning. I know... if I had to, what would I read if I had to choose? I wouldn't mind a blend of the two, really. So, like a romance that was like page turning. I don't. What do you think?
I love that you keep turning it off.
Sorry,
I never get interviewed. I think probably a bit of both because, as you say, having the two genres together blended nicely, you've got the relationship aspect, which can be really exciting. But then, if you take away some of that. Maybe coziness or some of that warmth and comfort and replace it with something suspenseful and tension and something that's going to take away potentially the warmth and comfort.
Yeah.
You know, you've got yourself a really exciting story.
That is a new thing. Romantic suspense is a very up and coming genre at the moment. So
maybe
there you go.
Can jump in there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, it's very, very, very popular at the moment. So
add to that a couple of very interesting characters, and you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You've got yourself a novel, as they say. So, what's your typical daily routine, writing routine like?
So. Anyone who lives in Wivenhoe and goes to the cafe in Wivenhoe will see me there most mornings. Or at Essex University. So literally, I drop the kids off at school, I walk either to the cafe or I walk up to the uni, if it's sunnier. And then I write for about 4 hours my fiction. I aim to do 3,000 words if I'm doing the creating, if I'm in the creating time. And then in the afternoon, I do all my admin bits. So I do all my, the small amount of social media I do, which is not a lot, I do that in the afternoon. And, you know, all the little bits and pieces and stuff, emails, that kind of thing, you know, probably interspersed with reply to Lexi's birthday thing, something, or, you know, tidy house, something like that.
Right.
So, yeah, that would be what my day looks like. And then I kind of go through phases with the writing. So I'll do, the first month will be just creating the material. So that would be when I'll create the novel. And then the next month I go over it and I edit and then probably the month after that, the same thing. Then I get lots of feedback from it and then I go over it again. So it takes about 4 months in total to write a novel, something like that.
So do you already have the idea for it? Are you already given a prompt or something?
So I start with the title, idea for the cover, tagline, all of that kind of thing. If I can't picture it, how it would look in a bookshop, then I don't write it, basically. Okay. I need to be able to be really clear. Otherwise, I could just wander off in all sorts of directions and it's not going to have a shape, you know. I totally get that lots of people do it the other way around and they write into it and then they shape it at the end. And I think both are... equally valid, and it's whatever works for you, really. And sometimes my books do end up being really different from how they started which is frustrating and very inefficient.
It's the frustrating, inefficient creative process.
Yes. Yeah, so it does happen like that, but that's roughly for you. By the way, I'm very aware that you and I as writers are going to be, I'm always fascinated by, oh, how do you write and all the rest of it. But I hope I'm not being incredibly boring in terms of just going, oh, and this is my word count. And this is my, you know.
No, we're on live radio. I would tell you if you were boring, not. because you mentioned earlier about getting out, well, you used to, well, you probably do more than that now, but 1,000 words per day.
3,000 words per day. Right, yeah, yeah. Exactly. Oh, I see what you're saying. So before I got published, it would be a minimum of 1,000 words a day. I used to do.
Yeah.
And then when it became something I could do full time, I do 3,000 words a day. But they do get a lot of editing. So they're kind, yes, they're very much like 3,000, like they've all come out, you know, not like 3,000 careful, poetic.
No, of course,
you know,
not. So this actually brings me on to, is rather topical, I should think, but you might know of it, you might not. In November, there is a global writing challenge.
Oh, I do know. NaNoWriMo. I do indeed, yeah.
Have you ever taken part?
I haven't, but I've met all the guys who put that on, and the guy who created it is just like amazing. He's so funny. He came to Brighton about, I think it's 2 years after it was started.
Right, this is going back about 14 years, is it, maybe?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think it's before I had kids, so it was when I lived in Brighton. And, yeah, it was about 2 years after he founded it. Maybe let's say 3 years. And it had started the first year, and I think he had like 10 people signed up, and then it just completely snowballed each year. And then the year he was seeing us, they had, I don't know, it was like 100,000 people were following it or something. And his mum was like, where have these people all come from? And he said, they've come from the internet, mum. They've come from the internet.
They're crazy people who, yeah, like to write.
Yeah. And my friend, Julia Crouch, who is an amazing novelist, beautiful, poetic, lovely language. She actually wrote her first book, Cuckoo, as NaNoWriMo. I always think I'm going to get it wrong. NaNoWriMo, National Novel Writing
Month.
Yes. Thank you. So, yeah, her first book, Cuckoo, which is an absolutely fantastic book. And actually, we can probably check the date he came to speak, because she'd written it that year, I think. So, she wrote that in National Novel Writing Month. And then I guess she probably spent a lot of time tidying it up. And then, you know, she published it. But I think it's a really, really great idea, because I think one of the biggest problems with writing is people not finishing. Mm-hmm. So if you're forcing yourself to do it in a month, mm-hmm, you're getting rid of that inner critic, or whatever you want to call it, that voice over your shoulder saying, is it good enough? Do you want to stop and go back? And, you know, because you have to just push on forward. And actually, if anyone does want to write a novel, my biggest tip is just keep... Don't go back over material you've written. Just keep going until you've done the first draft, and don't judge yourself about it. Even if you know something doesn't fit anymore or doesn't make sense, just keep going until you've finished, and then go back.
That's what editing's for, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, otherwise you'll just never. You'll go back forever. You can unpick forever on the first draft. So yes, I have heard of that. Yeah, I love the idea of it. I mean, I'm in fact. What is it? It's November, right? Is that right?
Yeah, first of the third.
I was thinking of, yeah, doing my next book, because I'm sort of about to start next novel, so I was thinking about maybe I'll join that.
If you're doing 3,000 words a day, gosh, it would be
easy peasy, you know, like not a problem. Yeah,
the rest of the week or the month off, can't,
yeah,
you? No, I was going to ask about it because of the discipline that you need, yeah, to write that many words a day. Obviously, it's not an issue for you because you write every day anyway. A lot of, yeah, people who don't write don't write every day, and they want to, but they don't know how to start or anything at all. It's really about quantity over quality. But it's getting those words out, getting,
yeah,
that
definitely,
basic backbone of a storyline, and then, you know, after the month is over, then you can focus on editing it, or,
yeah, yeah,
putting,
yeah,
it in a drawer for a year or 5 years, and then going back and editing it then.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's fantastic. And I think what it does for a lot of people is, because most people, there's a lot of people don't feel that, they're very daunted by the word count. So they're daunted by, like, oh, you know, I can write a short story, but, oh, could I ever do a whole novel? So actually just doing that month and looking and going, wow, I've got, you know, 60,000 words or 70,000 words, it really gives people confidence, I think, to be like, oh, I can do it. So
I think also, yay, the people who have never written a novel before and always say, there's a novel in us, I want to write it, it gives them an idea of the amount of work it takes to create a novel.
Yeah.
These things don't just fall out of the sky into your lap. You do, yeah, have to work to make these, yeah, things happen, don't they?
Yeah, and there's also, I think there's a bit in the middle of, there's always something happens to me when I'm writing my novels. I start off with this, like, in my head, like, the most fantastic idea, and it's going to be brilliant, and I start writing it, and the first pages turn out great, and I look at them and I go, this is fantastic. And then in the middle, I call it like the murky middle, it's where everything's like, oh, I don't know if this is a good book, you know, I'm just not I'm not sure, I don't know where I'm going, you know. And what I found is if I just push on past that bit, it's all okay. And then when you get to the end and can edit it, you know, it's, yeah, it's fine. So
I call it the saggy middle syndrome, isn't it? Yeah. Middle age thing.
Yeah.
Do you create a story or a character first? I know you mentioned this earlier, but how do you go about it, first of all?
So I feel like you probably should come up with a character first, but I don't. So,
you're a little rebel.
Well, I think the sort of the characters, the best books come with really fantastic characters. That's what it's all about, really, I think. But that's not how things tend to come to me. I tend to get an idea and kind of see it as a book cover, you know, and I think, wow, that's just going to be such a great story. It'd be really cool. And then I put the characters in later, and sometimes I end up, in fact, quite often, I end up ditching characters or rewriting them at the end and thinking that character was just not working. And it was interesting you talking about your daughter being an actress and how tough that, you know, what a difficult thing that is to kind of, you know, express the you know, the words of a writer and things. I think it's similar when you're putting people in a book, you know, you don't necessarily know, this sounds really pretentious, but it's true, you don't necessarily know how they're all going to interact with each other until it's finished. So it could be, if you, let's say you're, you know, if you're doing a film, you don't know how certain actors are going to, whether they're going to get, have chemistry or they're going to get on or any of that. And I think it's the same when you write a book, you don't know which characters are going to be funny, whether they're supposed to be funny or whatever you want from them. And some characters just end up boring, you know, they're just dull, they're not really coming out, you know, you thought it was a great idea, but they don't come out that well. So they're relatively easy, surprisingly, to change at the end, kind of. Sometimes it's like, especially with thrillers, it's harder because it's like this whole house of cards and you kind of think, well, this character just wouldn't have done that. They wouldn't have been there in that place. So, oh, God, you know, I've got to rewrite huge chunks. But, yeah, so that was my very vague answer. I think characters should characters should come first, but I do it in a backwards and, again, very inefficient way.
Well, that's what I was going to say earlier on when you said it's sort of inefficient. I think that's the creative process. It none of it comes chronologically.
Yeah,
it has to come,
sadly,
how it's meant to come.
Yeah.
And you just have to trust in the process.
Yeah.
Hopefully it works that way. But
yeah,
everyone's got such different styles, and it never works the same way with each story.
Yeah.
So, you know, you might get a title first and work around that, or you might get a name of a character first and work around that.
Yeah, exactly.
Who knows? I would ask you, though, that when you're writing characters and then you ruthlessly get rid of them, do you ever have a character that you think, wow, they're going to be pretty big, and they're not? Or the other way around, where I had a character once that she had literally a walk-on role, and then that was all she needed to do, say, one line, answer a question. She was a nurse. Answer a question, go. But the woman would not go. She was starring.
That's fantastic. Definitely. I've had sort of side characters that sometimes side characters become main characters because it's sort of there's less pressure on writing a side character, I think. So you're more, I don't know, you're freer with it. But for sure. And yeah, some characters have just, I mean, I would have to say the characters that I really love and think are brilliant are usually the ones that, I mean, I've never had it that they're the ones that readers don't relate to, if you know what I mean. So my favourite character, in The Bad Mother's Diary, my favourite character is definitely the mum. And when I ask readers, they all say the same thing. They would say, like, oh, the mum's my favourite, because she's just really kind of, I don't know, anarchic, I think. Okay. So it's a real, not the mum, the main character, Juliet, but her mum, so the grandmum, right. I suppose.
Great. Now, you said earlier on you're originally a journalist, so do you think those skills have helped you with your novelist skills?
Probably not, honestly. They probably haven't. I think I was always a novelist who had to be a journalist rather than the other way around, if you know what I mean. So I suppose writing is always helpful. I don't necessarily think the skills have been, you have to be more concise being a journalist. I would say tabloid journalism is probably quite helpful, because you really, there's a lot of pressure to get the words down, and I think that's a good discipline in a novel. I think novelists can be, you know, they have the luxury to be rambling sometimes, and I don't think that's good. I think you should keep it as short as you possibly can. I mean, as concise as you can, you know, within the story. I don't mean to sort of do down journalism. I think it's wonderful. Probably for some people, yeah. I don't think I did it for long enough, really. I think the ghostwriting probably helped most in terms of actually finishing whole books and forming whole books and all that kind of thing and getting my head around it. I suppose the other thing with books that you don't get with journalism is I get to connect with readers, actually really connect with them through reviews or through people emailing me and all that kind of thing. And the journalism that I did, I was never that journalist. I was always the kind of a freelance writing a feature for The Guardian or something. I wasn't like a columnist who actually properly connected with readership. So what's really, really nice about novels is just that having that connection and getting and finding out what you're doing right and all that kind of thing, which is brilliant and which I didn't necessarily get from journalism, but it was still fun. It was still good fun writing those articles.
Have you ever used any of that, you know, the feeling and the experience of being a journalist as a character or the material that they would have used?
In my case, I think it'd be too boring, honestly.
Because yes,
I wasn't like a journalist. You know, like some journalists have like really like, you know, they sort of travel around a lot. And my sister was a travel journalist and she has like so many interesting stories, but I wasn't. I was just a freelance and I'd just pitch ideas about something or other. When I was at university, I'd pitch ideas about stuff I saw on campus and stuff. So it wasn't like I was having this like Carrie Bradshaw lifestyle. It wasn't like that. I was just a dull person who liked writing, writing stuff, you know? So I didn't think it'd be a very interesting character, honestly, if it was me. However, Carrie Bradshaw is a very interesting character. I love that character. Probably mostly fictional, really, that journalism side of things.
Do you think you'd ever go back to it?
To journalism? No, I don't think I would, because I love writing books and I think that there are better people to do that job than me. It's quite... it's a fairly, I suppose, I don't know, rule-abiding job, I suppose. It comes with certain constraints. So I really enjoyed it and I loved it and it gave me a lot in my 20s, but now I'm kind of really enjoying writing books, so...
Do you think there's less creativity involved in...
Yeah, there's loads less, yeah. So it's not... I would say it's fairly uncreative, really, but still very good training for writing, I suppose. Writing is always... However you do it, if you get a job that you... If you want to write novels and you're in a book job, you're getting paid to write, it's pretty... cool, isn't it?
I mean, yes,
it's quite fantastic.
Yeah. But it's the discipline and the routine, the regular routine of writing that would maybe use towards the novelist aspect. I mean, but you...
Yeah, yeah, totally see what you're saying. Yeah.
You're using a lot of your day of writing anyway, so...
Yeah, I know what you mean in terms of having... I mean, I suppose I hadn't thought... Yeah, the fact that you're being... What's the word? I want to say sanctified. I'm not actually sure that's... A proper word or B the right word in this context.
We can use it. It can be
a word. Or just create a word.
Yeah.
So you're being, I suppose, having something published in the press gives you that thing of like, yeah, I'm a published, you know, I've had something published, so my writing must be of a certain standard. So there's probably that subconscious feeling that, you know, oh, but I mean, to be honest, from the discipline side of you, point of view, I have the complete opposite problem. I work way, way too hard because I'm cripplingly anxious about what will happen if I don't work. So I don't have a problem motivating myself. My problem is, will people get out of my way and let me work, please? Because I'm very worried what will happen if I don't, you know? So,
gosh.
Yeah.
So what's next for Susie Quinn?
So at the moment, I am going over my next book, which is currently called Not My Daughter. I don't know if that'll be the final title, but I think it probably will be. So that is a thriller, and it's about a woman who was in a relationship with a musician, and she possibly stole his child away, or did she? Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of going over that at the moment, and that's proving to be challenging, but I'm getting there. And then after that, I'm writing The Bad Mother's Wedding, and I'll just keep... writing more after that, I guess,
is the... Until there's no ink left.
Until there's no ink left, yeah.
So how can listeners find your books?
So you can find all my books always, always on Amazon. If you just type in Susie K. Quinn, I've got a page on Amazon. I mean, do people ever look on publisher websites these days? You just go on Amazon, don't you, really, I suppose? So my publishers are HarperCollins, Hachette, it was Hodder and Stoughton. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I was pronouncing that wrong for years. Hodder and Stoughton, I was saying for years, but
I've said Stoughton, so we're...
Oh, well,
knows?
Done.
Yes.
You're more sophisticated than I am, Sarah.
Obviously.
yeah, so, and what's it, Lake Union. So they're my publishers, but I don't really think anyone searches books like that.
It's probably...
I guess. So just look on Amazon, or just Google Susie K. Quinn and they'll come up.
Right.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for letting me put that out there. Buy my books.
and mine.
Yeah, and Sarah's too.
Oh, well, thank you so much for being on Writer's Block tonight. It's been lovely meeting you and chatting with
you. Yeah, you too.
And hopefully we'll get you back on again soon.
Thank you so much.